Hey guys, my name is Crystal Kenny, and I'm in love with creating. All things artistic and imagination involved. I'm an American girl who chased her creative dreams all the way to Paris, France, making a living using photography. This podcast takes you inside the stories of all the artsy folks I've met along the way and gives you that extra push to discover your creative gifts. The desire to create is deeply inside each and every one of us, and I give you the tools and inspiration to find a new way of living a more creative life. This is La Vie Creative, the podcast. My guest today is a writer and copywriter living in New York City, but she lived in Paris for many years and also worked for Vogue. She had a regular column called D-Bag Dating, where she would talk about her Parisian dating exploits. She's now written a book around the subject called Love in Translation, and we chat today about what it's like to date in France and also what inspired the book and her writing. Please welcome to the show, Marina Coroche. Hey guys, thanks so much for listening. If you want more bonus material and to support the show, head on over to patreon.com/lavie creative. And also don't forget to check out Amazon, where you can pick up my new book, Paris, A Life Less Ordinary. In the book, I talk about my creative adventures in Paris, from starting my business to being homeless, hello starving artist, to how I met all these wonderful creative people. Don't forget to check it out on Amazon. And also thank you so much once more for listening and for your support. Enjoy the show. So welcome to the show, Marina. I'm very happy to have you here. We have a mutual friend, Adri, who is fabulous. And I don't know, did you guys work at Vogue together? Is that how you met or how do you know Adri?
Hi, thank you for having me. And yes, I know her not from Vogue, but through a mutual friend. It was only later that we established like the Vogue connection. And I interviewed her for a few articles that I was writing for them.
Oh, that's very cool. Well, yeah. I'm so excited to talk about what you've created today because you used to live in Paris. You had a regular column for Vogue and you talked about D-bag dating, dbagdating.com. And you're,
exactly.
You're a retired Parisian expat and you have your new book that just came out, Love in Translation, based on your time in Paris and all that D-bag dating, douchebag dating. So I just want to talk about how France inspired you and talk a little bit about your story in Paris.
Thank you. Okay. Sounds great. So basically I grew up in Russia in St. Petersburg. And when I was a little girl, my mom was like, saw that I was pretty good at languages. So she put me into a French school. So I grew up learning French. It was an École Boulogne in St. Petersburg. And I grew up learning French, speaking French, and occasionally going to Paris on these school trips. And I was always enamored by the city, but like a child doesn't get too smitten by a city, you know? But then I think I was like, we moved to America when I was 17. And I think I went on my first trip back alone or with a few friends when I was about 21, 22. And I got to Paris and I was like, wow, this place is phenomenal. Like the boys are cute, it's fun and it's so fashionable, it's stylish. And like, there was just something about the city that I like loved, even like in a more like poetic way. Like I would walk around, I would get up super early every morning when my friends were like nursing their hangovers and just walk around and like admire the city and just think about how like incredible it would be to live there. But you know, when you're 21 and you're in college and all of this seems so like far away, you know, it was
impossible
completely. But I loved the city. I knew I had this like gravitational pull towards Paris. And then one thing led to another, and I was dating a boy for a few years. We were very much in love, and then we broke up. And the breakup was so traumatic and like traumatizing for me, you know, that I needed a big change. I just knew that like I was 25 years old, I had had my heart broken, my whole life was like turned around in that youthful way. I thought we would, you know, get married and have babies, and suddenly I was single, which sounds silly now at like 33 years old, but at 25, it all was very traumatizing.
Yeah, of course. We've all been there.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. So I took it very seriously and I was like, I need to change my life. So I I kind of knew, I already had this like genesis of an idea that it would be Paris. And I was not happy in my job. I was a fashion publicist. I didn't like what I was doing. I knew I wanted to write, but that what hadn't evolved much yet. I just knew I had this like creative bug inside of me that I wanted to fulfill somehow. And I knew that France had like some grad school programs that I could apply to. So I did that. I applied for a master's at Institut Français de la Mode, which is the French Fashion Institute. Mm-hmm. And I got in and I pretty much made the decision to move to France within like 1 month. So wow. I made the decision right away because the program was excellent. And then I moved within a month.
That's so fast. Everything was happening super quick.
Super quick. So in January, I broke up with this boy. And then in, I was nursing my wounds for a few months. And then like in August, end of August, beginning of September, I was moving to Paris. And then I came to France. I did the master's. It was fantastic. I really learned French, I have to say. It was an immersive master's degree where you don't work, you don't do anything, you live and breathe the school program. And It was all in, I was in the last year where everything was in French. So,
wow.
Yeah, I was taking accounting in French, which was challenging to see.
I was going to say, your French must be really good.
I forget things here and there, but at some point before I moved back to New York, I was pretty fluent. Like I was good. So I was coming out of the program and the master's program, and my interest was always in like communication, but also in brand strategy, branding, things like that. So I applied for an internship because you had to do an internship at the end of the program. I applied for one at Mazarin Digital, which is like a luxury digital communication agency. Very good one. In the 17th, actually. And I got the internship and I came on board as a strategist, brand strategist. And then, you know, at the same time, while all of this professional evolution was happening, like there was also, you know, my dating life. I had clearly moved on from the boy. And I was dating in Paris. I was dating all these different guys in school. There was one in school, and then there were quite a few outside of school, you know, in the neighborhood. I was living in Le Marais and just coming out at night with my friends for a glass of wine. I would meet like, you know, a guy who would become a story very quickly. That's the thing. Mm-hmm. I think it was probably because I was young and I was, you know, in a new country, and I was always very like adventurous and a little crazy.
Open.
Yeah,
yeah, open. Yeah.
I was a little crazy. I didn't know what I was doing, but I always had stories, you know, and I would come to my best friend's house. My best friend had moved to Paris at the same time as myself with her husband. I would come to their house and I would tell her these stories, and she would just stare at me and she'd be like, "You have to write about these things." She's like, "You know, you write, you want to write. You tell me you want to write, but then what are you going to write about? Like like my ideas were about fashion or, you know, expat life in Paris or something like that." But she's like, "Write these stories down. Girls will want to read it." Mm-hmm. And I think the blog name we already had, because I had started something similar a few years prior. Like many, you know, like in my early 20s. So I had this like dormant D-bag dating blog. And I don't think we could think of a better name. She's like, "Just do D-bag dating. I mean, they're all douchebags. Just do it." I'm like, okay, this is going to be very embarrassing, but okay. I'm like, I have no idea how this is going to coincide with my work at the agency, but okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was scared. I was nervous. But so I started it anonymously, but I was promoting it on Facebook. And because I was a publicist, I had been a publicist in the past, you know, I had all these editorial contacts on Facebook who I was friends with. This was kind of like before Instagram.
Yeah.
And suddenly this editor from Vogue.com was writing to me saying, I might be skipping something where like, a photo editor from Vogue was a friend of mine who had designed my logo, who showed it to the editors as well. Mm-hmm. I just want to give him credit where it's due.
Yeah.
Like, it was that, and it was the Facebook, I think. And this girl was writing, this editor from Vogue wrote to me. She said, "Hey, are you the girl, right? Are you the person behind D-bag dating?" And I was like, "Yeah." And she goes, "Oh, we love it at Vogue. We would love to have you write." And I was, I was shocked.
That's huge. Yeah. To get a job writing for Vogue, like your own column. That's so cool.
And of course I had like pitched to Cosmo already. And like, I was getting rejected already, which is, I think, is always the case, you know?
Yeah. It's all about who you know, right?
It partially, yes, of course. But I think luck is also so important.
Yeah.
Like, had I not been in Paris, they would have never reached out. I could have been writing this blog about New York, guys. Nobody would have reached out.
Yeah.
You know, it was just luck. It was luck plus, you know, there was something about the tone and the voice of the blog that they really liked. But they needed somebody in Paris, I think, because the French girl wave was just picking up. It wasn't like now where like we're kind of exhausting that whole topic.
Yeah.
It was before Caroline de Maigret had published her like How to Be Parisian book.
Yeah.
Maybe like 6 months before. So it was just about to get really
good
hot.
Good timing. Yeah.
Great timing. It was great timing. So I wrote this first article, like how to dress like a Parisienne, for a date. I spent a week writing it, and I'm talking like hours and hours and hours writing and analyzing and sending it to people. My mom had to approve, my friend had to approve, and they liked it and they published it right away. And you know, it was like a quick, it was one of those like Warholian, like, I don't know, 5 minutes of like internet, I wouldn't say fame, popularity. it was fun. It was like a high, but then like, I guess they wanted more. Yeah, they did. They wanted more articles, and it became a regular thing. And, you know, it was great. It was really gave me a chance to get a name my name out there as like a writer, and pivot my career also, because brand strategy was never my forte. And the agency I was working for, they realized that I could write and that they could, you know, use that because they needed to write brand copy for all these international brands. So I became a copywriter within the agency, which to this day is, you know, my key source of income. Like, I am a freelance copywriter and I have clients.
That's great.
This is what I do. This is how I make a living. So to be honest, like that little blog, that little dating blog has catalyzed so many life changes for me.
Yeah.
Very grateful for that like youthful bravery that I had, because you know, now I don't think I would ever have the guts to start something so, you know, out there. And
yeah, of course. I mean, that's so funny that we don't know how things are gonna domino, right?
No, you never know.
And I mean, maybe you're thankful to all those douchebags you dated now.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, the only reason I appreciate my boyfriend today is because I've dated all of them, you know, I went for all of that. And then when I got the book, so like the Parisian, a Parisian publisher heard about me through one of these articles about French girls that, or French guys or something, that went viral, a little bit viral, like was like reposted on like GQ and,
wow,
you know, Elle or something like that. And they reached out and asked me to write a book. So like then doing the analysis for like over a year for the book on my life and on all these boys, guys I had dated, that really was like therapy. And that is what allowed me to, you know, meet my boyfriend, who, you know, I'm very much serious with and like, you know, have created something much stronger with.
You had to kiss all those toads or whatever they say.
100%. I had to write about them, and I had to see what mistakes I was making as well, you know?
Oh, it's so funny to hear you talk about this, because I came to Paris when I was 26, and I could, the dating stories, I completely feel you. I think we just come here and it's so international, and there's so many good looking men, and they're interesting, and you know, they're foreign, and you just feel like, you know, it's so fun. And then you realize, wow, everybody is kind of, I mean, you D-bag dating. It's so true. And I just, I just finished my memoir talking about my time here, and I talk about some of that too. And I want to ask you, like, was it hard? I mean, like you said, it's self-analysis and you have to kind of judge yourself. And also, did you have to change some things because, you know, or did you tell the people you're writing about them, or how'd that work?
Okay, so this is really interesting. You can write as much truth as you want. If you can send it to the person and have them approve it.
Yeah.
So there were some people who I didn't exaggerate on too much. Like, I didn't change that many details because the stories were not that bad. And, you know, there were about two or three. The stories were not that bad. And, you know, I could get away with it. Everybody else, there were like three categories. There was one category where it's okay, write the truth. The person will sign a little contract in the end and everything will be fine. There's a second category where you mask enough details for the person not to be recognizable, but just in case you have them sign a little contract in the end. Those people are not very happy usually, but they're okay with it because, you know, as long as you have like a civilized relationship with them. I'm talking about like, you know, people you're still in touch with.
Yeah. And then what about people you're not in touch with?
Oh, yeah. And then there's a third category where you have to change everything. You literally have to put yourself in place of one of their friends reading the book who was around during the course of your guys' relationship. And you need to make sure that that person will have a very, very, very hard time piecing together those details.
Yeah.
And that's hard. You have to change so many things: professions, countries, physical appearance, a body shape. Like, you become like a fiction writer. And the funny thing is that with that, I had the best time as a writer.
You preferred that.
It was more fun. I got to play with it, and it was fantastic. I opened a whole new like realm for myself where I was like, oh, maybe I could write fiction one day. And I loved that. Yeah.
That's so cool. So by having to change everything legally, you've learned that you like writing fiction.
Yeah, because I had to make things up entirely. I couldn't use the things they said. I couldn't use the places we went to. And then like new stories were born, which I loved. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's so great to hear. That's very good information to have.
There's a legal process in the end. Be ready.
Yeah, of course. And then what are some of your writing rituals? Like, how do you prepare to write?
You know, it's funny. You get asked that question a lot. I can't say that I'm big on like, people are like, do you light candles? Do you create this like special atmosphere? I think that at some point with the book, it was literally wherever I wake up, the first thing I do is write. It's always in the morning, and it's always after like a coffee and a small breakfast. But it just has to be done. Like, I would, you know, I traveled a lot while writing it. I was between my house in New York, my parents' house, and I was in Paris for like a month or two, just doing some research and like just having my fun, you know, hanging out with my friends and kind of reviving memories. And it was always like wake up 6 a.m., coffee, breakfast, straight to writing. Around 9 o'clock, take a little break, have like another breakfast basically, and then get back to it, and then take another break around noon. And that would be a longer break always. And then I would get back to it usually later in the afternoon. Because writing is one of those things, you can't do too much of it a day unless you're on a serious deadline, because your brain just turns off at some point. My brain only works in the morning, apparently. So I just in the morning.
Yeah. So you have to find your time that works. So some people are night, some people are morning. It's just whatever works for you.
Exactly. Yeah.
But is there anything you'd... Oh, what was that?
No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Is there anything you do to keep your ideas like evolving or to keep yourself inspired?
I talked to a couple of friends, you know, even through like the blog, through D-Bag Dating. I met some amazing writers and just like some really smart people who have become my best friends. And my editor, actually, Jordan Nadler, she's a fantastic writer. She also lived in Paris, now lives in New York, and she was there for me whenever I needed her. So I would just call her. And then my other really close friend, who's just like extremely smart and like a great reader, I would call them and I would just talk to them. Like, I'm be like, I have writer's block, or I don't know what to do with this. Like, what do I do? And they would just catalyze some ideas for me.
So for me, it's great to bounce ideas off people.
Yeah. For me, it was always people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You have like your little tribe of help.
Yeah. What do you like? Do you read or do you talk to people?
Oh yeah, definitely. I read a lot. Like that's my, like, I love like reading definitely when I feel like I have a hard time writing. It's definitely, I read a lot of books and then I'm like, oh yes, I have more words. I have more inspiration that I can come from. Yeah. Cause sometimes you feel like you run out of making things interesting, you know?
Oh, 100. I read a lot of books while I was writing the book. I actually got way more into reading than I ever was before.
Yeah, and I kind of miss it now because now it feels like a guilty pleasure and I need to like get back into it again with everything going on.
I don't feel guilty about reading ever because I'm like, this is part of my job.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good part of the job.
Yeah.
And what were some of the biggest differences between dating in France and America since you've done both now?
Let's see. France, I think the men there... I couldn't read them well. I really did not understand their intentions. Like, the one day they want to marry you, or they meet you, they're so enamored by you, and they act as though you're together very, very quickly. That's what kept on happening to me, I remember. And then they just drop you as quickly as, you know, it ends as quickly as it begins.
Yeah.
And it's so hot and cold, and I believed them. You know, my biggest thing was I believed every single one of them. Like the guy who, you know, they would come on so strong and with all these grand things that they would say and do and these gestures. And because my best friend had once met her like Parisian husband like that, he came on strong and they had this incredible love story. I believed that this would happen to me 100%. Like, I'm like, yeah, of course this is how it is. This is how we are. This is going to be my future. And I was convinced that this would happen. And then they never were that interested, like, to continue. And I would always end up very disappointed. And then I came back home to New York because half of the book, a third of the book is when I moved back home, you know. And I feel like I was started dating here. And here they date exactly how Americans are known to date. You know, they date multiple people at the same time. They start slow. Everything is like a upward slope where, you know, like I call it funnel dating, where you start with a lot of contenders and then you dwindle it down to like a few and then like one.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And that's how it was in New York, which was frustrating because I'm impatient and I wanted something a little bit more like, you know, hot and heavy. But at the same time, it was nice to not get my hopes up entirely, like, so get my hopes up so much and then end up so disappointed in the end.
I think that happens a lot in Paris because, like you said, they are so like full on. And I know, I don't know how it is in Russia, but in America, like, just like you said, it's slow and you know that you're not the only one. You have to have the talk and they don't say, I love you away. And but in France, just like you meet on the first day, they're like, I love you. And you're like, oh, wow. Okay. I guess we're getting married.
Exactly, it's so funny.
Then they're gone.
That talk is what everybody always talks about. I had a French ex-boyfriend who wrote a whole story on D-bag dating about, you know, a French man dating in America, and it was all about talk, how American women want to have the talk, capitalized, and like how for French people it is an unknown concept. It's like, if we're together, we're together. If we're not together, we're not.
I always liked that though. That's kind of what I liked about dating in France, because like that's kind of how I am. I guess I'm French at heart. I'm like, if I'm with you, I'm with you. That you're the only one right now, and then maybe tomorrow I forget about you. But right now it's super hot.
And that's how Russians are, and that's how I grew up. You know. And even as a teenager, I remember, you know, you start going out and then you're together. I hear that everything is changing though with the year, with the social media,
or
with the apps, you know.
I hear that
like the abundance of options has essentially changed the dynamic in everywhere globally. But I think inherently we're all programmed a certain way. And I think my Russian side was embracing this French passion. So there wasn't much behind it. That's the thing.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah,
I think it's kind of like it can be empty. It's more like sexual passion than real mindful passion.
100%. It's like 90% sexual passion.
Yeah, definitely very French. And what's the best advice you've been given as far as writing goes or your creativity goes?
You know, it's funny because I read this question. Actually, Audrey, who is on your show, when I was listening to her speak, it like really resonated with me because I had always thought that, and it just like she struck a chord that I like never really put into words. She's actually given me so much good advice, you know, that now that I'm thinking back. She said in terms of like work, when she said on your show, start before you're ready, like just do it, just have the guts to just do it, go forward with it, and then you'll figure it out later. I think that is so important. I see so many people stalling and not doing what they want to do because they want it to be perfect and it never will be. And yeah, I think that is crucial when it comes to creativity and work. Your advantage is going to be talent, and it's also hard work, but also just bravery that you have to find somewhere. You have to just keep on going. And I'm so bad at promoting myself, and that's what I like dislike about myself so much. And sometimes it's just like, you got to do it. You just have to go on and do it and not overthink things.
Yeah. I think that's a big problem for women. A lot of times we hate talking about ourselves. And even for myself, it's something I struggle a lot with. Like I always just posted pictures of my clients or my work. I never really talked about myself. And I felt it was kind of like, you know, not humble to do that or annoying. Yeah. Like, why doesn't anyone care about me? Yeah. Like, I don't want to be this. But I also noticed that once I did start doing that, because all the like Jenna Kutchers and all those guys were like, you have to talk about yourself. You have to post pictures of yourself. I started, you know, really connecting with my followers and having more like instant messaging and really chatting and like things were more relatable. And it does make a difference. And you find it to be more about connection than just like frivolous, you know, my life is so great, you know?
Oh, absolutely. 100%. Instagram has been my like Achilles heel, to be honest, because I find it so unnatural. Just so contrary to who I am as a human being.
Like, yeah.
You know, I love to write. I love to be honest in my writing. I can be like, you know, metaphorically, like just bare myself completely. But when it comes to Instagram, it is this popularity contest. I know, like, it's just something about it feels wrong on an inherent level against everything that I was taught, against everything my parents ever told me about showing off and, you know, asking for attention. And but this is the game we have to face in 2020, and we'll have to face in the next, you know, probably decade or so. And we just have to learn how to play it, unfortunately. And it's hard. It's a constant battle in, you know, internal battle.
Yeah, I feel the same way. It feels very unnatural.
Yeah.
And I still struggle with it. But I'm starting to accept it more because, you know, as freelancers and as creatives, it's a big part of our job, you know, to talk about our work and to promote. And I try to do it in a way that isn't annoying, because I think we have enough overexposed skinny girls and sundresses on Instagram. I think we have enough of them, like, you know, hanging out on waterfalls and drinking coffees. But I just at the same time I focus more on the writing, on the captions, because, you know, as you know, writing starts to take over more of my life, that's like, you, it feels like I can tell the truth more and I can make it more, you know, more important genuine, than just genuine than just a photo. Because I also, the fact of the matter is, nobody's life is perfect and we're all struggling. And whether you live in Paris or you live in New York and your life blah blah blah, it's hard, you know. Every day is a struggle and we all have our problems. So I think it's great, like the the Celeste, who is it? Celeste, the one that posts those hilarious pictures of her, like compared to the model.
Yeah, I know.
Celeste Barber. Yeah. I love her because she's so good at being like, this is real life, you know, and not everybody has a perfect body. Not everyone has a perfect life. And, you know, we can relate to that. And I think it's cool that more people are doing that on social media. And also, like, when you're talking about dating in France, everyone imagines, you know, this really romantic courtship and everything's perfect. But no, we need to expose that. Yeah, it's really hard. It's not that great a lot of times.
Oh my God, everything is hard. Relationships are so hard too. Everything about life, it has very difficult side to it that people love to mask. But the only thing is, like, I agree with you 100%, but now it's become so trendy to be real. I know that all these people, these personalities with like hundreds and thousands of followers, they have managers telling them that they have to be authentic. Now it's about all these people creating content that is supposedly authentic, but it's also fabricated authenticity. So there's like an extra layer now, which is
Really confusing.
Very hard to wrap your head around any of it.
And also there's such a thing as oversharing, you know, some things are not meant to be shared to the masses and like meant for friends and family. And it's totally new territory, right? Like the internet, social media is very new in our brains and in our lives. And we just don't know how this is affecting us long term. It's kind of like, you know, when they were using lead paint and they didn't know it was killing them. It's like, wait, what's happening?
Instagram is the lead paint of our generation.
Yes, it's the lead paint. Exactly. Like 100 years later, they're going to be like, oh, they didn't know that was corrupting their brain and giving them cancer.
Oh my God, I know. Sometimes when I'm sitting there in the stupor and I get a reminder, like, you spend 30 minutes and I just keep on going because it's like a black hole. It sucks you in and you don't even know what you're looking at some point. How you got to this place and why you're looking at this person. Who is this person?
Exactly. Like, how did I get on my neighbor's dog's profile? Who cares? But I think that's why, you know, creativity is so important. Like, off the internet, like just writing or painting or whatever, you know, like I think that reconnects to like who we are and kind of drowns out the noise a little bit.
Of course. And if you can find a creative outlet, like Celeste Barber, I don't know how to pronounce her name, but the woman we just discussed, that's creativity. That is a form, you know, that is a form of like, that's a project. And that's great if you can find a way to launch it on Instagram and to, you know, build that kind of following that's there, not for you, like personality, but for the art that you're making. That's great. Like all these illustrators and all these Instagram poetry and all that stuff. Like, I think that's great.
Because you can be your own agent now.
Yeah.
Because before didn't know how to reach people.
Absolutely. 100%. And listen, like I can say the same thing about blogging. Like it wasn't real journalism. I was not part of that wave of bloggers that, you know, the magazines were resenting because they were taking, you know, spots at the fashion shows and all this stuff. Like I definitely wasn't part of that wave. I was just on my own, always like blogging on my little WordPress. But that's how I got a chance to write for a real publication. And I used my own, you know, this platform given to me by the internet. And I'm very grateful to the internet. It's Instagram. I feel like I'm too old and I don't get it.
Yeah, that's how I feel about TikTok.
Oh my God, forget about it.
I'm like, I'm too old.
No. In the beginning of COVID, I tried for a day, I think, and I tried to get my 44-year-old boyfriend on it and he just laughed me off. And
We tried to do it during COVID too. I was like, this is the new Instagram. And we just had no idea what
we
were
gonna
doing.
I'm going to be a star.
Yeah, I'm going to have a million followers tomorrow.
On TikTok.
Oh, it's so sad. I just kind of want to throw it all away all of it in the trash and just like go live on a boat in the Mediterranean and like without the internet.
Don't we all? I know.
Take a typewriter. But yes, I'm so excited for your book, Love and Translation. And where can people find it and find out more about you?
Thank you. Well, the book is available in France, in most bookstores, I believe, Fnac and most large bookstores should have it. I don't know because I'm not allowed out of America. So, I don't know. But they can also find it on Amazon. There's an there, you can order it on Amazon or you can buy the digital version.
Okay, and, ebook, yeah.
Yeah, and then you can find me on Instagram at Marina Karosh.
Okay.
And I guess you can also peruse my blog if you're interested in the archives. Which
yes, I'm going to be definitely diving into the archives.
There's plenty of like France New York articles that are like probably highlighted on the homepage even as like the top hits, because those are the ones that struck the chord the most with readers. Mm-hmm. So those are fun. You know, those are some fun reads.
Well, dive into D-Bag Dating, guys, dbagdating.com. And don't forget to check out her new book, Love in Translation. And thanks so much, Marina, for talking to me today.
Thank you so much, Crystal. It was really fun. Thank you.
Thanks so much for tuning in to Love Be Creative. You can find more information on missparisphoto.com. And if you enjoyed this show, please feel free to share and spread the word for all my creative guests. We have the power to help them to keep doing what they love. See you next time.